Trash about the things people love to hate and hate to love, and we're your hosts, Shelby and Matt.
Hello, hello, hello.
Guess what? This is episode 299, right? We did it. We finally did it.
Or what do you mean? This is episode. This is.
Aren't we waiting for episode 300 for our grab bag?
Yes. So this week's episode will be 299, but this is not. Yeah, episode. Yeah. This is a pop culture roundup.
I know, Shelby. I know, but I'm saying we finally made it. Like it's actually on the horizon now.
It's close, but we still have a few things to get through before we get there.
You're right.
This is pop culture roundup number 195. So we're getting close to our 200th pop culture roundup as well. But
right.
That might be a further off.
Yeah, we're struggling with the summertime plans. But
yes.
Anyways, my point is that in our next slew of episodes, in our next batch, in our next week, whenever that week comes, it will be our Q&A.
Yes. So if you have questions, now is the time to submit them, because we have been asking for questions for like 3 months now, and we might actually use them next week.
Yes, it's imminent.
Yes.
Well, yeah. So that, thank you for getting on my level. Thank you for understanding what I was going with here. Just trying to drum up interest again, you know, really remind people, motivate people to send in their cues.
Yes. Yes, so we can give you our A's.
Anyways, it's been a long time since we did a pop culture roundup, clearly, so.
But I feel like we needed to do one because of the Taylor Swift buying her masters back, which I feel like is something that we need to discuss, something that I did minimal research on. Oh, so okay, I was like, yeah. Oh, Shelby will just explain this all to letter. Me. No, I was with people who were reading the letter, and it was like, it was like handwritten, and they were zooming in and trying to figure out what it was. And I was like, you know what? This feels like a job for a woman, dare I say, for Shelby to do. And I be a typical man and just, you know, sit back and let her do all
of it. I got the notification obviously within like the first 3 seconds, and it was like she had this sort of check out my website for the full story, and it was like such a terrible it's fine, right? Like stylistically she wanted it to look like it was on her letterhead, but it was crazy because it was just a photo, so it wasn't like you could like even copy paste into a plain text or something. Like it was just, it was a wild choice because it was pretty wordy. The font was very small. And the most diehard Swifties are like, oh, you could have just zoomed in. Oh, you just zoomed in. And it's like, yeah, some of us could. But like, it's wild that she had a link for anyone struggling with like vision issues on her website, right? And it's like, well, you predicted this scenario to a certain extent. So like, why didn't you just like do a traditional blog post with the eye-friendly sans serif font? But whatever, it's done. The good news is that she bought her master's through a long journey that started in 2019. Her master's were sold from her old management company to Scooter Braun. She announced her hatred of this and the disgust with how her life's work was just up for, you know, being passed between two men back and forth. And then Scooter Braun sold them to Shamrock after some pushback, and Shamrock supposedly was going to start discussions to work with Taylor. But Taylor was like, if anything goes into Scooter Braun's pocket, I do not want to talk to you. And so that was kind of the last we heard. And then of course she's been re-releasing her albums with Taylor's versions with Fearless and Speak Now and Red.
And 1989.
Thank you. What a Swiftie.
Oh my gosh.
And then really what everyone's been waiting on and what we've talked about a little bit is Where's Reputation, Taylor's version and debut. Because she released Tortured Poets Department, and usually, I mean, one, people expected it a long time ago. But then after Tortured Poets came out, they were like, oh, well, she's doing a pattern where she does one new album, i.e. Midnights or Tortured Poets. And then she does, two TVs. And so people were waiting for that. People were watching the AMAs, like expecting her to make an appearance, which is hysterical in its own right because the AMAs was such a flop. But they thought Reputation was going to be announced. And instead, like the day after, we get this letter that's like, JK, guys, I bought these back. I got the deal I wanted. And I own all of my original work, all of my original recordings, all of my original, all of it, which is very exciting for her, obviously. A best case scenario for an artist of her, you know, heft and caliber. Like, I think it is a pretty miraculous thing to have happen. Obviously, the master's discussion in music has been an ongoing issue with Prince and the Beatles and all of that. So yeah, big victory. And did you want to talk about that at all, or just get to Where's Reputation's Taylor's version?
Well, I mean, I do think it's interesting that, yeah, she like finally bought these back. And it is sort of weird that like she bought them back after she's already done all of these re-releases, like, because now she has two versions of all of these albums, not necessarily for no reason, because the songs are kind slightly different, and then also, you know, there's bonus tracks and whatever. But it is funny now that like she just, it's like, oh well, she ended up getting sort of what she wanted. If she just waited like 5 years or whatnot, then
I think she had to prove the threat, like she had to prove that she could destroy the monumental, you know, gain, the monetary gains of owning her original stuff by releasing the new
stuff.
Do
we know how big of a like a hit those took at all?
I guess I don't know how we would measure that. Like, I don't know how us plebs would have access to those sort of data points, but generally speaking, I think it was accepted that it was kind of, oops, this isn't as valuable. And that's why Scooter Braun sold it, you know, lost like at a not profit. And so I think it's like, yeah, she was releasing competitive songs, but two, she was withholding approval on, you know, things like using her music in movies or using her likeness and, you know, whatever throwbacks they wanted. Like, so she had enough control over some of the pieces that I think her, you know, not being agreeable to it meant that they had to take some sort of hit.
So you think that if she hadn't have re-recorded, that they wouldn't have sold her these?
Correct.
Okay.
One, because I think Scooter sold them because this threat was looming and the press was bad, and it seemed, you know, there was clear support for Taylor to re-record her music. And then once that was proven, it was sort of like, what benefit do they have holding on to those? Like, they just look like the bad guys and they just aren't necessarily like reaping any rewards for it. Whereas, I mean, yeah, I don't know how much of a hit, like how much loss came from people streaming Red or 1989 before Taylor's versions, but Taylor's versions did so well. Like, it's clear that they're, you know, if they were going to number one as re-recorded albums, then that had to say something about like how many people were the kind of Swifties who were like, yeah, fuck y'all, I'm not gonna listen to the OGs until my mother says I can. And that's why they're now streaming, they're like top streamers on like iTunes today, is like all of Fearless, all of Debut, all these originals that hadn't been getting the same plays until.
I just wonder, like, or in my mind, like, owning these masters is sort of just like passive income because you don't have to do anything with them. And people are listening to it. Like, sure, the Swifties have gone and like removed the old versions from their Spotify playlists and added the new versions and are very careful to only listen to the new versions. But like, I don't care. Like if yeah, I, you know, it's like, yeah, it's like if something pops up on my Spotify shuffle or whatever, I'm not like, is it which version is this? Oh, no, I can't listen to this. So yeah. I would think that they have to be raking in a fairly large quantity of money every month just from like all of these plays of the songs on Spotify and streaming and whatnot, even if they don't have access to her likeness. And it's kind of like, in my mind, people are going to be streaming these songs for forever. So it's almost like indefinite money that you're going to be getting from this. Whereas if you sell them to Taylor Swift, like, sure, you get a big lump sum, but like,
you think it was a bad business decision to sell?
Well, it feels like a bad business decision to me. I mean, I don't know all of like the contract terms and such of that. And also, you know, maybe the person was like, well, okay, you know, I'm 70 years old, I'll take the $6 million or however much it is rather than, you know, whatever the sort of cat slower rollout of money is. But I don't know, it just feels weird to me that like that they would have sort of been that concerned about these re-releases. In my mind,
like it dilutes the value. And I think that is the main source. Like, yeah, they could also, it's probably true that Taylor has an aggressive legal team. It's probably true that they were like, okay, like what's the benefit of having Taylor in our good graces rather than having her mark us as enemy number one? And so beyond that, I think the music was a big part because like, yeah, you're not a Swiftie, you're not listening to this, but even if you just think about how the algorithm of Spotify prioritizes the Taylor's versions, like that is going to be a hit to the originals. And so I feel like, yeah, I don't think they did this out of the goodness of their hearts. I'm sure they ran the numbers somehow and they're like, yeah, fine, here, you can buy them. Win-win for us. And we'll just call it a day. Good, madam. Yeah. And now she might like, I mean, no one knows how much it was for. Like some people were reporting $600 million or $1 billion, but and Trepain or Taylor's representative said that number was highly inaccurate. Obviously, we know what it sold to Scooter Braun at $300 million. So it's like, who knows the number? Obviously, she's also at a peak where she can afford to buy and pay a premium. You know, she's a billionaire after her Eras tour. So I kind of feel like I feel like I predicted like this deal seemed inevitable. And it's kind of like explains why she hasn't re-released anything else. But what was also interesting in the letter is she sort of addresses the elephant in the room by saying like, listen, guys, I actually haven't even finished re-recording Reputation, which was kind of a shock to anyone who's been dialed into this because she hinted once at everything being done. And then on top of that, like last year, she was like, oh yeah, the Reputation vault tracks are insane. Like, I can't wait for people to hear them. And so.
And then they just played one. One of them was in a movie or something, wasn't it recently?
You mean Look What You Made Me Do?
Was yeah.
The re-recording? Yeah. The Taylor's version of Look What You Made Me Do was in the the Handmaid's Tale finale, yes. I think. Very cute. And so, yeah, she has some of it done, she said, but she also admitted that it hadn't been like a fun process to re-record that one, which makes sense because it was a very specific time in her life and a relationship that, you know, even if she's over it, it still would hurt to like be like, oh, my lover's like a daydream. And
a lot of those songs are bad. So maybe that's why.
That's ridiculous. That's she's inaccurate.
Like, she's like,
that's
she's
inaccurate.
Like, she's like,
that's
oh, I actually false. Don't. I saw a tweet.
Defamation?
Did I send you the tweet that was like, wow, Taylor Swift will pay $600 million not to have to go to Blake Lively and ask for her baby to re-record the gorgeous thing? And
I mean, that's true.
And I was like, that is funny. Yeah. But, I mean, that song is bad. There's other bad songs on the album.
Anyways, it doesn't matter. You're in the minority there. Reputation was definitely the most anticipated of the re-recordings, especially because of the vault tracks. So she did say, I do have vault tracks. I maybe will release them if that's something that's interesting to you. It's just like absurd. It's honestly diabolical for her to ever play coy like that at this point, when it's like every single move she's made for the last 2 years has been like reputation Easter egg. Oh my gosh, there's a snake in her vicinity. Reputation's coming. Like, whatever. She also said she fully re-recorded Debut, and she's like, yeah, guys, it's freaking sick. I love it. It's great. Maybe I'll release it someday. Like, and I think is messed up too. I think she should have released it in celebration of this.
I mean, and maybe she will. Lord knows our capitalist queen, like,
she will release it.
She will release all of that, and she'll release it in 75 versions.
Yeah,
and
exactly. If you
buy all 100 versions of the album, it forms a desk. And, you know,
I mean, like, the 20th anniversary of Debut is next spring. So everyone's like, oh, she's waiting for that, which is just like, just give us Debut. Like, move on. That's the one I want most, because it's like, you know, it's where her vocals are the worst, the weakest, and I think some of those songs are fun and have been forgotten and not revisited because they're kind of like, they're kind of painful to listen to in a way, and I want it right now. And I think she owed us that. I think she should have released it as like, here, I got my voice back and my name back. So here's Debut.
I also feel like if she's re-recorded most of Reputation, like, I think she will just finish it. And then
I don't think so.
Because I'm like, again, the money. Like, I think
but
that
I think she'd do like a Reputation deluxe where she did a re-release of the original with the vault tracks.
But it's like, she already has, like, Look What You Made Me Do was out there. I mean, I guess it depends on how far along she's in the process, but how many tracks are even on Reputation? That was before her honestly, I'm going to have 100 tracks per album phase, right?
Yeah, no, it was like, it's one of her shorter. But I do feel like, I didn't listen to the Look What You Made Me Do Handmaid's Tale version. I wonder if it's more... If it's less, oh, this is like, I don't know how you see the permissions of what the song actually is. Like, would it say Taylor's version in the credits or something? You know what I mean? Or is it just like a what's it called? A remix, you know?
I think it's a re-recording.
Oh, okay.
Because like, theoretically, she wouldn't, if she's not giving access to her old, I mean, I guess it's possible that maybe the deal went through before whatever.
That's right, yeah.
But it's like, she wouldn't have access to the old one. So so it would have to be a re-recording of some kind or another.
And I think they got Delicate too, right? She released,
She
did release a couple Reputation tracks. Anyways, yeah.
I'm just like, it seems like if there's money involved, she will be doing it. She has not really been shy of doing things for money when the quality wasn't quite there. And I think that this seems like the perfect opportunity.
I don't know. But then why talk about it the way she did in her letter?
Because she's psychotic and she's going to do weird things to just like, you know, trip people off. I will say, instead of celebrating by releasing her debut album, she celebrated by going to dinner with Selena Gomez in the most hideous dress I have ever seen.
Not the most. You cannot say that. She's worn way worse.
Yeah, she's worn worse. But it was like so ill-fitting and just like, what are you doing? Like, for someone who has so much money to look consistently so bad and bad in different ways, you know what I mean? It's not like, I just don't like her aesthetic and, you know, it's all sort of like too colorful or something. It's not like JoJo Siwa where you're like, okay, it's bad, but bad in one specific way. It's like Taylor Swift has somehow managed to make every type of fashion, every brand, it's always just bad. It's accessorized bad. It's lumpy. It's not fitted. It's fitted too much. It's just like, oh my gosh. Like,
I don't think this outfit, I saw her in an uglier dress. This one's not that
like
bad.
Black, like sackcloth.
I mean, it's like very
kind of
like,
It's very like
old Hollywood adjacent.
Like I wasn't even gonna say that. It's like it's flapper, but it's like home ec. It's like if you told me she made it herself, I wouldn't be shocked.
That's what she's been doing in her downtime.
I can't re-record. Look what you made me do. Instead, I am making dresses. Maybe she's becoming Amish, and that's why she doesn't want to do what made me do.
Her like announcement photo shoot was very much like high school yearbook photo shoot. You know what I mean? Like, bring six of your favorite items, and we'll pose with it by the train tracks. Like, that's the vibe I was getting. And good for her, happy for her. But I was like, I guess I expected more. You know, something a little bit more.
No, she has bad taste, and we've known this for quite some time.
I think the white studio was the wrong choice.
Oh well, 1000%. No, it's like oh, she was a football player. Here's her with all of her trophies around her. Like yeah it's 1000% giving that. But also, you know.
But anyways, yeah, she's doing great. She's on some new shit. And I'm who knows? I'm curious to see what happens over the next year with her, because it's like, okay, this albatross has been removed from her neck. She suddenly can, like, is she going to put the Reputation tour movie back up somewhere? What is she going to do now? She has all this free time, not stressing about who owns her voice or however she wants to phrase it. So it's like, is she just going to be freaking Travis Kelce's, what's the term?
Wag.
Wag? Yeah. I just like, is she, what's coming next?
Wait, I'm going through her Instagram feed right now, and I am just laughing out loud again at the fact that she was in the the Variety Directors on Directors, and Martin McDonagh had to talk to her about being a director. So wild. So that's what she's working on. That movie. She has a movie. Right. That's what's coming next. Exciting. Okay. And that's actually my favorite Taylor Swift era that's coming because it's going to be so sad.
You're gonna have to eat your words when she wins an Oscar for best indie dramedy.
That's not a category at the Oscars, unfortunately.
That's Taylor Swift. That's the Taylor Swift update.
I think that we should keep it. It's Pride Month. Taylor Swift, perhaps a bisexual. Mm-hmm, we should continue by discussing perhaps another bisexual that is JoJo Siwa.
Because I honestly scroll past any story about her, but I know there's been some drama. So please, this is your chance to enlighten me.
Right. So JoJo Siwa obviously came out as, I believe, a lesbian.
Yeah, explicitly,
Yes, back like a couple of years ago, she was dating this girl. You know, all of her outfits or whatever were like rainbow, and she was just like gay. Right? Yes. And so then she went on Celebrity Big Brother UK, where she, where the first thing that made headlines was that Mickey Rourke, the actor, like said some homophobic comments to her that got her all riled up. Comments about how she wouldn't be gay much longer or something like that, which at the time like felt very homophobic, but perhaps was prophetic. Maybe Mickey Rourke knew something that we didn't. No. But so then she's in this Big Brother house, you know, in Big Brother famously, you're like sequestered. People fall in love while they're in there because they've got nothing else to do. And she gets like very, very close to this guy, Chris Hughes, who's a British actor, I think. I'm like, what is he actually? Yes, a TV show host. And so he and her like are getting closer. They're sort of like, you know, giving each other back massages and stuff. And because it's Big Brother, you know, like the audience gets to see everything, But yeah. It's not like you can really ask questions. So people were kind of like, huh, like, what's going on here? What's going, like, this feels like they are, it's like romantic, but JoJo Siwa was a lesbian. So this can't be that. JoJo Siwa has a girlfriend who's just like sitting at home waiting for her and is like cheering for, yeah, watching the, so it was just like a very bizarre sort of situation. But I think people didn't really, at least I was kind of like, oh, okay, like she's like a little too touchy with this guy in the Big Brother house, but whatever. So then she comes out of the, so then she gets out of the Big Brother house, the game ends, and almost immediately her and the girlfriend break up, and she breaks up with the girlfriend, and so it's a whole hullabaloo, and everyone's like, wait, and then all of a sudden she's like actually in a relationship with this guy Chris, and that they say that it's not platonic anymore, because they had been saying that it was platonic. So, and then a couple of days ago or over the weekend, they posted a photo on Instagram that was like the two of them sort of naked in bed together, and he's shirtless, and you know, she's like leaning on him, supposedly asleep, but like, you know, they're taking a selfie. I mean,
like, how old is he? Like, what's the
vibe? Well, here? So that's the big thing is that she is 22 and he is 32. So not that like a 10-year age gap is crazy, but it is really weird when you think about how young she is and just sort of how impressionable to a certain degree. And also just like these reality TV people are so immature, like, or I guess child stars. It's like they've never developed and they're just like doing random stuff. Like, and so, yeah, so now everybody's confused of like, okay, well, is she a lesbian? Is she bisexual? Was she never actually a lesbian? What's going on with this guy? Also, it's weird that he's so much older than her. The whole situation is just sort of bizarre. And I think from kind of a branding perspective, it's interesting because JoJo Siwa was like a kids star, so lots of kids liked her. And then she pivoted hard into this lesbian thing and sort of became like a gay icon, but people were kind of annoyed by her, but she was a little bit too like adult to be for her kid fans, like she wasn't wearing the side ponytail and stuff. And then now that she's broken up with the girlfriend and started dating this guy, the gays are sort of like, huh, well, okay, now what's going on here? So I don't, not that like her career is dead, but I'm just, she's not necessarily making a lot of fans, I don't think, in this process. Not that matters. But here's
my question.
But
has she been like, because I've seen like, oh, she's a homophobe, or like, oh, this is, like, has she said stuff that's like, oh, I was wrong, I'm not a lesbian, LOL? Or is it just like everyone's assuming, like, isn't that kind of binary to be like bisexual erasure or like fluidity and like, you know what I mean? Like, why is everyone so obsessed with who she's dating? Has she been like, you know what I mean?
I think that it had to do with the girlfriend. I think that she sort of like dumped her unceremoniously. Yeah. Like, I want to say like the day she got out of the Big Brother house, you know, like that they had been a couple going in and then the girlfriend had to watch all of this unfold on TV. And then immediately upon getting out of the house, JoJo was like, yeah, bye. And so I don't think that necessarily, I think people didn't
like that. Every episode of like every finale of like Bachelor is like, they end up regretting their choice. You know what I mean? They like break up as soon as the show airs. And then it's like, I'm going back with this other final two. Or I guess I'm just fascinated by this like policing of JoJo Siwa, and it feels kind of again, I'm kind of out of the loop on it, but adjacently it seems kind of like, I don't know, doesn't it feel kind of like we're infantilizing her, or like expecting, like, you know, she's 22, like why do we, I don't know,
I think it's just messy, yeah. Which isn't to say, like, I think that if this was a normal person and who wasn't a celebrity, this sort of like makes sense of, oh,
yeah.
You think that you're into only into women, and then you meet the guy and you're like, oh, wait, no, maybe I'm into him. Maybe I'm into both. Maybe I'm bi. You know, so I think I don't necessarily think it's a bad thing, or that she shouldn't be.
Yeah.
Having these feelings, of course. I think it's just the world sort of watching her be this messy and sort of handle it this kind of poorly is what's funny or intriguing. You know,
I guess she's kind of done it in the reverse too, like coming out so hard as lesbian.
It's just she just like bulldozing through these things. Yeah. And I think that in a way that makes sense when you're 22, because you know you're just like doing stuff, so especially when you've been a child star. But I think, especially with relationships, it's so you know, they're so like touchy, and she hasn't really handled this with a lot of nuance or
sort of. But it's also like she hasn't been like really public about it. I mean, yes, in the sense that she was on a show when it happened, but I got the sense that she was like ranting on Instagram, like telling people to mind their business or
I don't know about that, but I think when she was on Big Brother, she like came in saying that she was a lesbian, and then she met this guy, and then sort of she kind of rolled that back and was like, well, maybe I'm just like queer. And and I think, and I think it's tricky because like she is going through this all live on cameras, and then it's like your significant other is sitting at home watching you and being like, wait a second, what's going on?
That does suck for the girlfriend, ex-girlfriend. That's crazy to,
but
I mean,
so Jojo Siwa continues to be a bizarre public figure.
And he does like look very, he looks very old. Like she just looks so babyish, you know, like she has such a young face. I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
Just because we saw her grow up, but like they look so weird together. I will say that. But I also want to talk about the messiness of your fave, your gay icon.
Oh, Patti LuPone.
Yeah. How are we feeling? I meant to check in with you. I meant to ask what it feels like for your fave to fall out of favor.
I mean, it was so interesting because Patti LuPone is known for, you know, giving like being sort of in feuds and outspoken and dragging people and whatever. And I think that she sort of just like did the same thing that she normally does, but picked the wrong target this time. And picked somebody who, like, one of the few people in the theater world who's more beloved than she is. And I think it sort of backfired on her. I also don't necessarily think that... So what happened was she did an interview with The New Yorker, I believe, where she was complaining...
Kind of doing her thing,
where she was complaining about Keisha Lewis, who is a Broadway singer who is in the show Hell's Kitchen, which is the Alicia Keys thing, and then also about Audra McDonald, and said that like her and Audra McDonald are not friends. And when the interviewer asked her how she liked Audra McDonald in the Gypsy revival, that Patty was sort of like, oh, it's a like look out the window, it's a lovely day, like didn't answer. And I wasn't really sure what this stemmed from until I did some digging. And I guess that Patti LuPone earlier this year was in a show called The Roommate on Broadway, which was a play. And it was in a theater that was directly next to the Hell's Kitchen Theater, which is a big, loud musical starring Alicia Keys. And that the music from the Alicia Keys musical was like wafting through the wall into the theater that Patti LuPone was doing her play in, and that was frustrating to her. And so she went to the Hell's Kitchen Theater and complained about that and asked them if they could turn down the music level, which I think they did to a certain degree. I don't know if it fixed the problem, but you know, whatever. Keisha Lewis, who is in Hell's Kitchen, sort of takes to social media to complain about Patti LuPone's or I don't even necessarily think she names like Patti LuPone outright, but just to, she was upset about the fact that there was Patti mentions
it seems racially charged to tell a black musical to quiet down.
Yes. And also Patti LuPone, while she was annoyed with the Hell's Kitchen thing, refused to sign a playbill that somebody asked her to sign that was Hell's Kitchen because the shows were next to each other and they were like, oh, can you sign this? And she's like, no, I'm not signing that for this show, which again is a show about Alicia Keys's life. So that it's also a very black show that stars a lot of black people. So Keisha Lewis posts this about Patti LuPone. Audra McDonald comments something underneath it, or gives it like a thumbs up emoji or something or another under this post that Keisha Lewis has. And then Patti LuPone is upset that Audra McDonald is seemingly supporting Keisha Lewis and the Hell's Kitchen team in this feud between the roommate and Hell's Kitchen about if their music gets too loud or not. Yeah. And so then they ask Patti LuPone about this in this New Yorker interview, and she calls Keisha Lewis a bitch and sort of rants about her and says that Keisha Lewis said that she was a vet, that her and Patti LuPone were both Broadway veterans. And Patti LuPone was like, Keisha Lewis is not a veteran. Like, she has not done nearly as much as I have. Yeah.
But didn't pick up on any sort of, I'm getting a sense of a support for Patti LuPone in this situation that's gotten.
I do not think that Patti LuPone should have done what she did. And I think it was very rude and also very tone deaf. I think that Patti LuPone was basically doing the same thing that she's done to people like Andrew Lloyd Webber and Glenn Close and other, other big names of the Broadway world that she has been feuding with. I think that she just failed to realize that there would be like a racial element to it, which I think is her fault. Like, she should have.
Or she failed to recognize her own.
Right. Yes. Or she. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. And so then, like, does this interview. Then everybody in the Broadway world sort of gets up in arms. There's this big petition where a bunch of people sign it, calling out Patti LuPone. Then Patti LuPone issues an apology.
I'm not one to say sorry, but that changes today.
Right. Yes. Where she's like, usually I don't say sorry about these things, but I do sort of recognize that, you know, I was in the wrong. So I don't know if, like, I really like Patti LuPone in general. I feel like, yes, she did the wrong thing here and perhaps has some biases that she was not previously aware of, but I think it was more of like her just doing the same thing that she's been doing for 30 years and miscalculating at this time, rather than like that she's a terrible person. And I do think that she means what she said when she like is apologizing for this. So I don't know.
Interesting. Yeah, no, for sure.
I do think one interesting wrinkle in all of this is that Audra McDonald is getting a lot of very good publicity during the Tony voting window. Not that, you know, that has any connection to any of this or whatever, but in the Audra McDonald versus Nicole Scherzinger battle for this best actress Tony, I'm like, oh, well, this might end up leading to a few extra people being like, wait a second, we actually love Audra McDonald and like, good for her for handling this so well, and let's actually give her this Tony after all, which I would love, because Nicole Scherzinger is like a Trumpy person. So
yeah.
if this was all some sort of long con to get Audra McDonald to beat Nicole Scherzinger, I'm excited for that.
Patti LuPone fell on her sword,
right,
in a magnanimous way. She played like the Judas Iscariot card to lead us to salvation.
Just like she did in Agatha all along,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
She stayed behind and said, Audra, go get that Tony. I will flip this building upside down and land on a stake.
No. Audra McDonald doesn't need Patti LuPone's help. Okay.
No. And Audra McDonald and the girl in Boop won the sort of like precursor Drama Desk Award. So I'm beginning to think if that's looking good for Audra on Come Tonys.
Yeah. Wow. Patty. She's still gotcha.
Patty.
You love a messy older woman. What is that about psychologically?
I don't know. But I mean, I do love Patti LuPone. And I think in Patti LuPone's mind, she was pissed off about a noise complaint and doing, you know, bitching as she normally does.
It seems to let it simmer this much and then to be so ready with that bitch situation. There's some work, you know, calling her in.
Well, in the shtick
can only take you so far.
In the statement, she did say, "I hope I get the opportunity to talk to Audra or Keisha." And I was like, "Girl, like you all live here. Like you could have just gone to one of these theaters that these women are regularly performing at and apologized or picked up the phone."
Well, it's like that. What's that show with Sabrina? The movie with Sabrina Carpenter, who makes like a racial
emergency.
Oh, yeah. And she comes to apologize and they close her face. I think that's deserved here. So maybe she tried to reach out, or her teams did, and they're just like, nah, thanks. And that's fine. But yeah, learning and growing. It'll be interesting to see how her next interview goes if she gets one. Because I know like right around the same time she released a podcast episode with Catherine Hahn about Agatha All Along, where they were talking about like behind the scenes stuff and they were all, you know, Gabby happy together. I mean, obviously, totally different friend group, but I'm saying that was recorded before all this. So I'm curious how she'll engage with media going forward.
I mean, I feel like she'll probably be more of the same, but I think this does sort of go to what we talked about a lot on the podcast of once you get to a certain level of famous, you sort of lose your ability to, you're just like so disconnected from the world. Yeah. That you can't really see. And I think that a normal person could realize that complaining about these people is not the same as going after Andrew Lloyd Webber. But I think in Patti LuPone's mind, she's like, oh, people like it when I'm bitchy. Like, I can be bitchy to anybody about anything. And it's like, well, that's not really exactly the case. Like, people...
And your righteous anger doesn't always come out on top.
Right. Yeah. It's like, sometimes, like, you still have to be punching up and not punching down if you're going to be going with that shtick.
Well, the other news real quick, Stranger Things announced their release date for this never ending
three release dates.
And it's coming, the first chunk of the final season is Thanksgiving, and then another chunk on Christmas, and then the series finale episode, which I'm sure will be like 2 hours on its own, is New Year's Eve or New Year's Day.
New Year's Day.
Which is just like wild. It's bonkers. Like, I don't know. I mean, maybe Netflix really figured it out and they think this is the right move. But I think they should all be like, let's get this out sooner rather than later. Like, please, for the love of God. No one wants to hear about this or watch it. We'll have to deal with three episode drops of talking about how old these kids look now. Like, I don't know. I just think it's the wrong move.
I think this makes sense from Netflix's perspective because they have had a lot of success with these holiday drops. And I think that they realize, there's a lot of people sitting around at home. Let's have them put out this TV show during that period. Like, I think that's when Bridgerton came out. That's the Squid Game model. So I get this plan.
But those all came out all at the same... I don't know. Those were split. Wait, were they?
Well, I don't know if they were split necessarily, but they came out like at at the holidays. Yeah, so yeah. Like, yeah. I think that they're thinking, I think that for Netflix, some of their biggest days are like the Thanksgiving yeah. holiday and the Christmas holiday, where you've got a lot of people who are sitting around. There's not a lot of things open to do, and they're looking for something new to watch. And so I think that kind of makes sense for them. I don't like the fact that Netflix doesn't drop things on a week-to-week basis. I think that they are losing out on time in the conversation by doing that. So I think that this is a move in that direction of, okay, rather than drop the season all on Christmas, we're going to do these three batches. So then theoretically, Stranger Things is in the conversation from Thanksgiving through, you know, the first week of the new year, which is a lot longer than it normally is, theoretically.
I don't like it.
But I do think there's just like the problem of, will this season be good? All of these kids look so old. Like, what even happened in the last season? I don't remember. Like, the whole Stranger Things thing does feel like it's gone on too long and has been too slow, and the world has sort of lost interest. I think because this is
like
the final
Gene Zionist, so
Noah Schnapp. Yeah. Am I excited to watch it? Not necessarily. I think because it's the final season, a lot of people are going to like zhuzh up the interest that they need to watch it just to see how it finishes. I think if there was a whole nother season, they would be in danger of sort of like a fall off moment. But I think at this point, people have watched the first four seasons for the most part. Like, I think that this will like sort of sail through and then it'll be done. The thing I don't know about Stranger Things is like, how much cultural cachet do we think it's going to have? Once it's over, are people going to care about it? Are people going to go back and rewatch it? Like, is it going to be something?
I mean, I guess they have the play, musical play.
Yeah, they have the play.
But I think it'll be one of those things like Game of Thrones where it's like, oh, watch the first three seasons and then stop type thing. I think it's soured, you know?
Well, like, the first three seasons were great.
Yeah.
And then there's only been, like, season four, I think, like, I didn't like it as much, but I didn't think it was terrible.
I don't think I'd rewatch it. Like, I think I'd rewatch season one, two, three, but, like, season four was just so messy, and then that it doesn't end satisfactorily. And so if this season is also kind of mid, I'd be like, oh, okay, I'll just pretend season three was it.
I hope that this like pulls things together, because the problem with season four, I think, is we are sort of in this pattern of like they're just spinning their wheels trying, like, because you can't actually get to like the final big bad boss, so instead we're getting these sort of like half-assed kind of things, where hopefully this time that like the Upside Down can just be destroyed for forever. But who knows?
They just like, they split open the entire city in the finale. Like, it seems too big now. Like, all the charm is gone in a way, because it's not going to be just these kids like running around trying to solve a freakish mystery no one else is aware of. Like, now it's like the whole city is on fire and it's split open. And so it's just become like bigger.
Look, it can't be worse than the last two seasons of Lost. And you've rewatched those about 50 times. So
I love my side jump. No, Justice for Lost. We'll have to do it. You know what? We should do a podcast spinoff where we just watch Lost again.
There's already about 10 of those, Shelby. We already have one podcast that doesn't have a good angle. We can't start a second podcast that also does not have a good angle to it.
We've got to come up with something original. I want to speak up for Lost. I want people to go back. It's not as bad as you remember. Everyone's just like shitting on the finale for no reason.
Speaking of not as bad as you remember, let's get into Love It or Hate It. I would like to talk about the season premiere of season three of And Just Like That, which
you're now a fan.
People don't like And Just Like That. People think it's bad. And I say to them, I think that they like the original too much and held it in too high esteem. The original season or, you know, series of Sex and the City, like, is very good television. I do really love it, but it is kind of goofy. And I think in our minds, it's a little bit more, you know,
glamorous
and prestigious and life-changing and whatever. And it's like, no, like, Charlotte's having sex with her rabbi. Like, it's goofy. And I will say that, and just like that struggled, I think, because you don't have Samantha. And so instead they brought in four new characters. And there was the first season of And Just Like That is messy in a lot of different ways and not good, I think, in various pieces of it. Like, but all of the Miranda stuff is bad in the first season. And the fact that Samantha's there is not there is bad. And then these four new characters, like, don't really, they quite kind of quite don't know what to do with it. The second season, I think, is a lot better. And going into the third season, I think we've really sort of figured it out. They got rid of Che Diaz. They got rid of the lost professor lady. They've really consolidated the group down to just, like, the original three and then Seema and Lisa Todd Wexley. And I, like, the season premiere is so funny. Cynthia Nixon, who plays Miranda, like, Miranda is sleeping with Rosie O'Donnell, and then Rosie O'Donnell turns out to be a virgin nun. Like, that is a funny plot line. I'm sorry. That is something that is out of the original series. And I just, Charlotte's such a good mom, and everything is just, like, goofy in exactly the right way, and it feels like such a comfort show, and, like, they're really doing exactly what they did in the original. It's just, like, not as glamorous because it's all of these, like, 50-year-old women instead of people who were 30.
I mean, I get your point, and I don't have much room to stand on as someone who's only seen snippets of everything of this series, but I think... I mean, I watched season two of In Just Like That. And I think the criticism is that it's not that well written or storyboarded, you know, like yes, the original series is goofy toned. But
I don't necessarily think the original is, like, a groundbreakingly well storyboarded thing.
But it was, like, snappy. It was, like, I don't know. I haven't watched the premiere of this one. I did like her hat. I think that's a brave choice.
Oh, so funny. Like, I think the thing is, like, I watched it all together. Like, I watched Sex and the City, and then I watched And Just Like That, like, back to back. And for me, they didn't feel that different. But that's because I'm watching them all in the year of our Lord 2025, or I guess 2024. Yeah. I think that watching Sex and the City back in the year 2000... it felt more monumental and more transgressive and more original and interesting, and you hadn't, and more like feminist, because you hadn't seen characters like this lead a show and talk about sex in the way that they did. Like, I think that it was something that was sort of monumental at the time. Watching it now in 2024, I think it's kind of goofy, and there's lots of things that are really goofy about it.
That's true.
All of these women's relationships are, like, sort of bad in a lot of different ways. And I think we think about men differently now than we did back in the 2000s. And these people who were supposed to be hot and suave and, you know, sexy back then are now, like, kind of either derpy or just, like, shitty men. And I think that that is what, like, I don't think that there is a difference really between Sex and the City and And Just Like That. I think the difference is the time period in which they came out. Like, I think if And Just Like That had come out in 2007 or whatever, whenever the a regular show ended, if it just continued with that, I don't think people would have hated it as much. That's my
hot take. I mean, yeah, you should do an article breaking that down. I think it's an interesting perspective to be, like, coming in with a modernist lens to review both the old and the new, and kind of how your own framework might shift how you view and digest that first iteration.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, that's interesting. I mean, I've seen some people say that it just wasn't a good episode, but you liked it. So
I thought it was fun. I mean, I liked the show, so.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's also because I do think some of the criticism is, like, for better or for worse, like, they just exist in a fake you know, it's an alternate universe. Like, it's not real. They don't, like, yes, there's conversation around gender and sexuality, but it's not, you know, it's still like a very white, pristine, clean version of New York.
They all have so much money. Like, ridiculous amounts of money.
Just like,
and I think you just have to lean into that. Of
That's part of the camp, I think.
I think the problem, is the first season of And Just Like That, they are not leaning into that. They're trying to say some things and make it more political or make it more interesting. Mm. And I think those are the parts that really fail. And I think in season two, they
just own it.
They trimmed a lot of that stuff out. Yeah. And I think for season three, it's really like, Carrie bought this giant house in Gramercy, and she's in sort of like a war with the guy who lives down below her because there's too many rats in the backyard. You know what I mean? Like it's so out of touch, but in like such a fun way.
Yeah.
And well, I don't even think it's really like aspirational because they're so... so insane and they're so goofy and their outfits are so bizarre. It's not like, oh, this is what I want to be when I grow up. It's like, no, like this is not real. These are like wacky characters.
Yeah.
And I love it.
Well, I was going to mention another refresh, which is the Lilo and Stitch movie. Have you?
Oh, yes. I did not watch it. No. Yeah. Is it good?
You know, it was funny because I haven't liked these, you know, remakes, and also Lilo and Stitch isn't necessarily like a favorite, but we rewatched the original before going to the live action, and I thought it was fun. Like, it hits pretty much the same beats. They make a couple of smart changes to streamline characters and plot, but the interesting piece was this ending, which was kind of strange. Like, talk about like, what are we saying in this day and age? Because in the original, you know, they defeat the aliens and the sisters live happily ever after. You know, they get permission to keep Stitch. In this one, the entire issue is that the older sister wants to go to college where she got a full ride to UCLA. And yet she feels obligated to stay and, you know, take care of her 6-year-old little sister after their parents die. And so the ending is literally her giving up Lilo to child protective services and being placed in the foster care of their neighbors. So it's like, okay, yeah, she's with her neighbors, but technically she's a ward of the state now. You like gave up all rights to her. Like, that's just, it's pretty crazy. And it kind of felt icky in a weird way that I haven't stopped thinking about, where it was like, is this the happy ending? Like, I don't know. Like, yeah, I get that she would want her own dreams and she'd want to go to college and whatever, but like, I don't know. Like, it just seems weird to literally give your child to the state, like, not your child, to give your family to the state after spending the whole movie preaching like Ohana means never leaving family behind.
Well, maybe the state is also sort of the family, you know?
Exactly. Big Brother is watching.
Yes. In Trump's America, we got to make America great. We're all kind of one, you know?
Yeah. So hopefully there's not like a heart attack with the neighbor who can no longer become a foster parent, and Lilo's given up to a different family, and her sister can never get her back. That'd be a dark sequel. But it's also like, well, I don't know. It left a strange taste in the mouth. Like, it's like she could have gone to college in Hawaii. Like, you know what I mean? Like, why did they choose to change that piece over everything else? Like, they kept some of the same jokes, some of the same sets, but they're like, you know what we need? Is to waddle into the foster parent adoptee mess here and figure that out. Because it's like, well, honestly, it just reminded me of how dumb CPS can be, where instead of giving Nani the money to take care of her sister, she's like, if you don't have the money to take care of her, we're going to give her to a family and pay them to take care of her, which is just the most ridiculous system in practice, and really speaks to how our country should really work on changing that, you know, looking out for each other as Lilo would for Stitch. So maybe it was a revolutionary piece of cinema that asked us to sit in the discomfort and really problem solve our way out of that to more creative solutions.
See, I only watched Lilo and Stitch once because we watched in theaters and my parents didn't like that Lilo was mouthy to the sister.
Yeah, no.
And so we never saw it again. So I really don't remember how the original ended, and I probably won't see this one actually. So, but yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Tricky. Very pro fostering, very anti family reunification. So,
speaking of families and interesting forms, we'll be discussing Chosen Family on Thursday's episode.
Yes.
Watching the Amazon Prime original series Overcompensating, starring Benny Drama himself, Benito Skinner. And yeah, if you want
drama.
What's Benny Drama? You don't know Benito Skinner. Okay. I'm like, I'm going to pretend
this is a good teaser. This is a good teaser for the episode.
This is a teaser.
I'll do better research.
For Shelby being homophobic in this, I can only imagine what other types of questions she's going to ask. Shelby going full JoJo Siwa, not knowing anything about lesbians anymore. Yes, we'll be discussing Benny Drama. Benito Skinner on Thursday's episode. In the meantime, if you'd like to submit questions for our 300th episode, please do that. Thank you for listening. We'll see you guys on Thursday. Bye.